We're starting chapter 18 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, called Dumbledore's Army. Umbridge has been reading your mail, Harry. There's no other explanation. You think Umbridge attacked Hedwig? He said, outraged. I'm almost certain of it, said Hermione grimly. Watch your frock, it's escaping. Harry pointed his wand at the bullfrog that had been hopping hopefully toward the other side of the table. Accio, he said, and it zoomed gloomily back into his hand. Charms was always one of the best lessons in which to enjoy a private chat. There was generally so much movement and activity that the danger of being overheard was very slight. Today, with a room full of croaking bullfrogs and cawing ravens, and with a heavy downpour of rain clattering and pounding against the classroom windows, Harry, Ron, and Hermione's whispered discussion about how Umbridge had nearly caught Sirius went unnoticed. I've been suspecting this ever since Filch accused you of ordering dung bombs, because it seemed like such a stupid lie, Hermione whispered. I mean, once your letter had been read, it would have been quite clear you weren't ordering them, so you wouldn't have been in trouble at all. It's a bit of a feeble joke, isn't it? But then I thought, what if somebody just wanted an excuse to read your mail? Well then, it would be a perfect way for Umbridge to manage it. Tip off Filch, let him do the dirty work, and confiscate the letter. Then either find a way of stealing it from him, or else demand to see it. I don't think Filch would object. When has he ever stuck up for students' rights? Harry, you're squashing your frog! Harry looked down. He was indeed squeezing his bullfrog so tightly its eyes were popping. He replaced it hastily upon his desk. It was a very, very close call last night, said Hermione. I just wonder if Umbridge knows how close it was. Silencio! The bullfrog, on which she was practicing her silencing charm, was struck dumb, mid-croak, and glared at her reproachfully. If she'd caught Snuffles, Harry finished the sentence for her, he'd probably be back in Azkaban this morning. He waved his wand without really concentrating it. His bullfrog swelled like a green balloon and emitted a high-pitched whistle. Silencio, said Hermione hastily, pointing her wand at Harry's frog, which deflated silently before them. Well, he mustn't do it again, that's all. I just don't know how we're going to let him know. We can't send him an owl. I doubt he'll risk it again, said Ron. He's not stupid. He knows she nearly got him. Silencio. The large and ugly raven in front of him let out a derisive caw. Silencio, silencio. The raven cawed more loudly. It's the way you're moving your wand, said Hermione, watching Ron critically. You don't want to wave it. It's more of a sharp jab. Ravens are harder than frogs, said Ron testily. Fine, let's swap, said Hermione, seizing Ron's raven and replacing it with her own fat bullfrog. Silencio. The raven continued to open and close its sharp beak, but no sound came out. Very good, Mrs. Granger, said Professor Flitwick's little squeaky voice, and Harry, Ron, and Hermione all jumped. Now let me see you try it, Mr. Weasley. Oh, right, said Ron, very flustered. Silencio. He jabbed at the bullfrog so hard that he poked it in the eye. The frog gave a deafening croak and leapt off the desk. It came as no surprise to any of them that Harry and Ron were given additional practice of the silencing charm for homework. They were allowed to remain inside over break due to the downpour outside. They found seats in the noisy and overcrowded classroom on the first floor in which Peeves was floating dreamily up near the chandelier and occasionally blowing an ink pellet at the top of somebody's head. They barely had sat down when Angelina came struggling toward them through the groups of gossiping students. I've got permission, she said, to reform the Quidditch team. Excellent, said Ron and Harry together. Yeah, said Angelina, beaming. I went to McGonagall, and I think she might have appealed to Dumbledore. Anyway, Umbridge had to give in. Ha! So I want you down at the pitch at 7 o'clock tonight, all right? Because we've got makeup time. And we've got to makeup time. You realize we're only 3 weeks away from our first match? She squeezed away from them. Alright, we will continue now. She squeezed away from them, narrowly dodging an ink pellet from Peeves, which hit a nearby first year instead and vanished from sight. Oh, she vanished from sight, not the ink pellet. Ron's smile slightly slipped as he looked out the window, which was now opaque with hammering rain. Hope this clears up. What's up with you, Hermione? She, too, was gazing at the window, but not as though she really saw it. Her eyes were unfocused, and there was a frown on her face. "Just thinking," she said, still frowning at the rain-washed window. "About Snuffles?" said Harry. "No, not exactly," said Hermione slowly. "More wondering. I suppose we're doing the right thing. I think, aren't we?" Harry and Ron looked at each other. "Well, that clears things up," said Ron. "It would have been really annoying if you hadn't explained yourself properly." Hermione looked at him as though she had just only realized he was there. "I was wondering," she said, her voice stronger now, "whether we're doing the right thing, starting this defense against the Dark Arts group." "What?" said Harry and Ron together. "Hermione, it was your idea in the first place," said Ron indignantly. "I know," said Hermione, twisting her fingers together. "But after talking to Snuffles..." "But he's all for it," said Harry. "Yeah," said Hermione, staring at the window again. "Yes, that's what made me think it wasn't such a good idea after all." Peeves floated over them on his stomach, pea shooter at the ready, and automatically all three of them lifted their bags to cover their heads until he passed. "Let's get this straight," said Harry angrily as they put their bags back on the floor. "Sirius agrees with us. So you don't think we should do it anymore?" Hermione looked tense and rather miserable. Now staring at her own hands, she said, "Do you honestly trust his judgment?" "I do," said Harry once. "He's always given us great advice." An ink pellet whizzed past them, striking Katie Bell squarely in the ear. Hermione watched Katie leap to her feet and start throwing things at Peeves. It was a few moments before Hermione spoke again. It sounded as though she was choosing her words very carefully. "You don't think he's become sort of reckless since he's been cooped up in Grimmauld Place? You don't think he's kind of living through us?" "What do you mean, living through us?" Harry retorted. "I mean, well, I think he'd love to be forming the secret defense societies right under the nose of someone from the Ministry. I think he's really frustrated at how little he can do, where he is. So I think he's keen to kind of egg us on." Ron looked utterly perplexed. "Sirius is right," he said. "You do sound just like my mother." Hermione bit her lip and didn't answer. The bell rang just as Peeves swooped down upon Katie and emptied an entire ink bottle over her head. Should we stop there?
No.
Okay, thank you. The weather did not improve as the day wore on, so that even at 7 o'clock that evening, when Harry and Ron went down to the Quidditch pitch for practice, they were soaked within minutes, their feet slipping and slotting on the sodden grass. The sky was a deep, thundery gray, and it was a relief to gain the warmth and light of the changing rooms, even if they knew the respite was only temporary. They found Fred and George debating whether to use one of their own skiving snack boxes to get out of flying. "I bet she'd know what we'd done," said Fred out of the corner of his mouth. "If only we hadn't offered to sell her some puking pastilles yesterday." "We could try the fever fudge," said George. "No one's seen those yet." "Does it work?" inquired Ron, hopefully, as the hammering of rain on the roof intensified, and the wind howled around the building. "Well, yeah," said Fred. "Your temperature will go right up." "We get these massive pus-filled boils, too," said George, "and we haven't worked out how to get rid of them yet." "I can't see any boils," said Ron, staring at the twins. "Well, no, you wouldn't," said Fred darkly. "They're not in a place we generally display to the public. But they make sitting on a broom a right pain in the..." "All right, everyone listen up," said Angelina loudly, emerging from the captain's office. "I know it's not ideal weather, but there's a good chance we'll be playing Slytherin in conditions like this. So it's a good idea to work out how we're going to cope with them." "Why would that be a good chance? I mean, it's equally likely to rain or not rain on any day. But anyways..." "Harry, didn't you do something to your glasses to stop the rain fogging up when we played Hufflepuff in the storm?" "Hermione did it," said Harry. He pulled out his wand, tapping his glasses, and said, "Impervious." "I think we all ought to try that," said Angelina. "If we could just keep the rain off our faces, it would really help visibility. All together now, come on. Impervious. Okay, let's go." They all stowed their wands back on the inside pockets of their robes, shouldered their brooms, and followed Angelina out to the changing rooms. They squelched through the deepening mud to the middle of the pitch. Visibility was very poor, even with the impervious charm, Light was fading fast, and curtains of rain were sweeping the grounds. "All right, on my whistle," shouted Angelina. Harry kicked off from the ground, spraying mud in all directions, and shot upward, the wind pulling him slightly off course. He had no idea how he was going to see the snitch in this weather. He was having enough difficulty seeing the one bludger with which they were practicing. A minute into the practice, it almost unseated him, and he had to use the sloth grip roll to avoid it. Unfortunately, Angelina did not see this. In fact, she did not appear to be able to see anything. None of them had a clue what the others were doing. The wind was picking up. Even at a distance, Harry could hear the swishing, pounding sounds of the rain pummeling the surface of the lake. Angelina kept them at it for nearly an hour before conceding defeat. She led her sodden and disgruntled team back to the changing room, insisting that practice had not been a waste of time, though without any real conviction in her voice. Fred and George were looking particularly annoyed. Both were bandy-legged and winced with every movement. He could hear them complaining in low voices as he toweled his hair dry. "I think a few of mine have ruptured," said Fred in a hollow voice. "Mine haven't," said George, wincing. "They're throbbing like mad. Feel bigger, if anything." "Ouch," said Harry. He pressed the towel to his face, his eyes screwed tight with pain. The scar on his forehead had seared again more painfully than in months. "What's up?" said several voices. Harry emerged from behind his towel. The changing room was blurred because he was not wearing his glasses, but he could still tell that everyone's face was turned toward him. "Nothing," he muttered. I poked myself in the eye, that's all." But he gave Ron a significant look, and the two of them hung back as the rest of the team filed back outside, muffled in their cloaks, their hats pulled low over their ears. "What happened?" said Ron, the moment that Alicia had disappeared through the door. "Was it your scar?" Harry nodded. But, looking scared, Ron strode across to the window and stared out into the rain. "He can't be near us now, can he?" "No," Harry muttered, sinking onto a bench and rubbing his forehead. "He's probably miles away. It hurt because he's angry." Harry had not meant to say that at all, and heard the words as though a stranger had spoken them, and yet he knew at once that they were true. He didn't know how he knew that, but he did. Voldemort, wherever he was, whatever he was doing, was in a towering temper. "Did you see him?" said Ron, looking horrified. "Did you get a vision or something?" Harry sat quite still, staring at his feet, allowing his mind and his memory to relax in the aftermath of the pain. A confused tangle of shapes, a howling rush of voices. "He wants something done, and it's not happening fast enough," he said. Again, he felt surprised to hear the words coming out of his mouth. He was quite certain they were true. "But how do you know?" said Ron. Harry shook his head and covered his eyes with his hands, pressing down upon them with his palms. Little stars erupted in them. He felt Ron sit down on the bench beside him, and he knew Ron was staring at him. "Is this what it was about last time?" said Ron in a hushed voice. "Your scar hurt in Umbridge's office. You know who's angry?" Harry shook his head. "What is it, then?" Harry was thinking himself back. He'd been looking into Umbridge's face. His scar had hurt. He had that odd feeling in his stomach, a strange leaping feeling, a happy feeling. But, of course, he hadn't recognized it for what he was. He'd been feeling so miserable himself. "Last time it was because he was pleased," he said, "really pleased." He thought something good was going to happen. The night we came back to Hogwarts, he thought back to the moment when his scar had hurt so badly in his and Ron's bedroom in Grimmauld Place. He was furious. He looked around at Ron, who was gaping at him. "You could take over from Trelawney, mate," he said in an odd voice. "I'm not making prophecies," said Harry. "No, you know what you're doing," said Ron, sounding both scared and impressed. "Harry, you're reading Yuno's mind." "No," said Harry, shaking his head. "It's more like his mood, I suppose. I'm just getting flashes of what mood he's in. Dumbledore said that something like this was happening last year. He said that when Voldemort was near me, when he was feeling hatred, I could tell. Well, now I'm feeling when he's pleased, too." There was a pause. The wind and the rain lashed at the building. "You've got to tell something," someone said Ron. "I told Sirius last time," he said. "Tell them about this time," said Ron. Can't, can I? Said Harry grimly. Umbridge is watching the owls and the fires, remember? Well, then Dumbledore. I told you, he already knows, said Harry shortly, getting to his feet, taking his cloak off the peg, and swinging it around himself. There's no point in telling him again. Ron did up the fastening of his own cloak, watching Harry thoughtfully. Dumbledore would want to know, he said. Harry shrugged. Come on, we've got silencing charms to practice. They hurried back through the dark grounds, sliding and stumbling up the muddy lawns, not talking. Harry was thinking hard. What was it that Voldemort wanted done that wasn't happening quickly enough? He's got other plans, he thought. Plans he can put into operation very quickly indeed. Stuff he can only get by stealth. Stealth, like a weapon. Something he didn't have last time. He had not thought about those words in weeks. He'd been too absorbed in what was going on at Hogwarts. Too busy dwelling on the ongoing battles with Umbridge. All the injustice of the Ministry interference. Now they came back to him and made him wonder. Voldemort's anger would make sense if he was no nearer to laying his hands on the weapon, whatever it was. Had the order thwarted him, stopped him from seizing it? Where was it kept? Where is it now? Mimbulus Mimbletonia, said Ron's voice, and Harry came back to his senses just in time to clamber through the portrait hole into the common room. It appeared that Hermione had gone to bed early, leaving Crookshanks curled in a nearby chair and an assortment of knobbly knitted elf hats lying around a table by the fire. Harry was rather grateful she was not around, because he didn't want to discuss his scar hurting and have her urge to go to go to Dumbledore, too. Ron kept throwing him anxious glances, but Harry pulled out his potions book and set to work to finish his essay, though he was only pretending to concentrate, and by the time that Ron said he was going to bed, too, he had hardly written anything. Midnight came and went while Harry was reading and rereading a passage about the scurvy glass, Lovage and Sneezewort, and not taking in a word of it. These plants are most efficacious in the inflaming of the brain, and therefore much used in the confusing and befuddlement drafts, where the wizard is desirous of producing hot-headedness and recklessness. Hermione said Sirius was becoming reckless, cooped up in Grimmauld Place. Most efficacious in the inflaming of the brain, and therefore much used. The Daily Prophet would think his brain was inflamed if they found out that he knew that what Voldemort was feeling. Therefore, much used in confusing and befuddlement drafts. Confusing was the word, all right. Why did he know what Dumbledore was feeling? What was this weird connection between them, which Dumbledore had never been able to explain satisfactorily? Where the wizard is desirous, how he would like to sleep, of producing hot-headedness. It was warm and comfortable in his armchair before the fire, with the rain beating heavily on the window panes and Crookshanks purring and the crackling of the flames. The book slipped from Harry's slack grip and landed with a dull thud on the hearth rug. His head fell sideways. He was walking once more along the windowless corridor, his footsteps echoing in the silence. At the door at the end of the passage loomed larger. As the door at the end of the passage loomed larger, his heart beat fast with excitement. If only he could open it and enter beyond. Harry stretched out his hand. His fingertips were inches from it. Harry Potter, sir. He awoke with a start. The candles had all been extinguished in the common room, but there was something moving close by. Who's there? Said Harry, sitting upright in his chair. The fire was almost extinguished, the room very dark. Dobby has your owl, sir, said a squeaky voice. Dobby, said Harry thickly, peering through the gloom toward the source of the voice. Dobby the house elf was standing beside the table, on which Hermione had left her a half dozen knitted hats. His large, pointed ears were sticking out from beneath what looked like all the hats that Hermione had ever knitted. He was wearing one on top of the other, so that his head seemed elongated by 2 or 3 feet, and the very topmost bauble sat Hedwig, hooting serenely and obviously cured. Dobby volunteered to return Harry Potter's owl, said the elf squeakily, with a look of positive adoration on his face. Professor Grubblyplink says she's all well now, sir. He sank into a deep bow, so that his pencil-like nose brushed the threadbare surface of the hearth rug, and Hedwig gave an indignant hoot and fluttered onto the arm of Harry's chair. Thanks, Dobby, said Harry, stroking Hedwig's head and blinking hard, trying to rid himself of the image at the door in his dream. It had been very vivid. Looking back at Dobby, he noticed the elf was also wearing several scarves and innumerable socks. Said his feet looked far too big for his body. Have you been taking all the clothes Hermione's been leaving out? Harry asked. Oh, no, sir, said Dobby happily. Dobby has been taking some for Winky, too. Yeah, how is Winky, asked Harry. Dobby's ears dropped slightly. Winky's still drinking lots, sir, he said sadly, his enormous round green eyes, large as tennis balls, downcast. He does not care for clothes, Harry Potter. Nor do the other house elves. None of them will clean the Gryffindor tower anymore. Not with the hats and socks hidden everywhere. They find them insulting, sir. Dobby does it all himself, sir. But Dobby does not mind, sir, for he always hopes to meet Harry Potter, and tonight he's got his wish. Dobby sank into a deep bow again. But Harry Potter does not seem happy, Dobby went on, straightening up again and looking timidly at Harry. Dobby has heard him muttering in his sleep. Is Harry Potter having bad dreams? Not really bad, said Harry, yawning and rubbing his eyes. I've had worse. The elf surveyed Harry out of his vast, orb-like eyes. Then he said very seriously, his eyes drooping, Dobby wishes he could help Harry Potter, for Harry Potter set Dobby free, and Dobby is a much, much happier elf now. Harry smiled. You can't help me, Dobby, but thanks for the offer. He bent and picked up his potions book. He'd have to try and finish the essay tomorrow. He closed the book, and as he did, the fireplace illuminated the thin white scars on the back of his hand, the result of his detention with Umbridge. Wait a moment. There is something you can do for me, Dobby, said Harry slowly. The elf looked around, beaming. Name it, Harry Potter, sir. I need to find a place where 28 people can practice defense against the dark arts without being discovered by any of the teachers. Especially, Harry clenched his hand on the book so that the scars shone pearly white. Professor Umbridge. He had expected the elf's smile to vanish, his ears to droop. He had expected him to say this was impossible, or else that he would try, but his hopes were not high. What he had not expected was for Dobby to give a little skip, his ears waggling happily, and clap his hands together. Dobby knows the perfect place, sir, he said happily. Dobby heard of it from the other house elves when he came to Hogwarts, sir. It is known as the come-and-go room, sir, or else as the room of requirement. Why, said Harry curiously. Because it is a room that a person can only enter, said Dobby seriously, when they have a real need for it. Sometimes it is there, and sometimes it is not. When it appears, it is always equipped for the seeker's need. Dobby has used it, sir, said the elf, dropping his voice and looking guiltily. When Winky has been very drunk, he's hidden her in the room of requirement. He's found antidotes to butterbeer there, and a nice elf-sized bed to settle her on while she sleeps it off. And Dobby knows Mr. Filch has found extra cleaning materials there when he has run short, sir. And if you really needed a bathroom, said Harry, suddenly remembering something Dumbledore had said at the Yule Ball the previous Christmas, would it fill itself with chamber pots? Dobby expects so, sir, said Dobby earnestly. It is the most amazing room, sir. How many people know about it, said Harry, sitting up straighter in his chair. Very few, sir, but mostly people stumble across it when they need it. They often never find it again, for they do not know that it is always there waiting to be called into service, sir. Sounds brilliant, said Harry, his heart racing. It sounds perfect, Dobby. Where can you show me where it is? When can you show me where it is? Any time, Harry Potter, sir. And Dobby, looking delighted at Harry's enthusiasm, said, We could go now, if you like. For a moment, Harry was tempted to go now. He was halfway out of his seat, intending to hurry upstairs for his invisibility cloak, when, not for the first time, a voice very much like Hermione's whispered in his ear, reckless. It was, after all, very late, and he was exhausted. Not tonight, Dobby, said Harry reluctantly, sinking back into his chair. This is really important. I don't want to blow it. It'll need proper planning. Listen, can you just tell me exactly where this room of requirement is and how to get there? And I think we'll stop there. That's the end of his section, don't worry. I didn't stop just before his answer. Maybe I think it didn't go. No, I don't want people. I love you so much. Sleepwalking.